We're here at the North Carolina Swine Health Seminar with Beringer Ingelheim. With me is Steve Meyer, Paragon Economics. And Steve, you gave a good presentation today with an overview of where the markets are today, what the crops look like, and what that means for hog producers. First of all, let's just talk about the condition of the corn and soybean crops. You said they were the best you've ever seen, and I know I drove through Missouri a couple of weeks ago, and I said the same thing. I have never seen the crops look like that.
Yeah, and they look like that just about everywhere. I mean, there are a few spots, and we had a few places of hail damage, and I was in west central Minnesota last week. It didn't look great, but I'm not sure it ever looks great there. You know, it's not. So, I mean, it just looks very good. Crop condition ratings are about as high as they've been in many years, and so we're looking at a great crop. We've had very favorable weather conditions. If anything, it's been a little cool in the Corn Belt, but I'd take cool over heat just about any day, and we've had sufficient moisture. This crop is really progressing. About the only cloud hanging over the crop, really, is it was planted just a little bit late, so there is a little bit of threat of a frost, an early frost, but you know, based on history, the 2 years we're comparing to right now are 1994 and 2004, and in those cases, the final yield got 10 or 12 bushels larger than the August estimate on corn. So my guess is that this crop's going to get bigger before we put it in the bin, and if that's the case, then we're going to have much lower cost of production.
Well, and that, as far as the prices are concerned, right now we're looking at some pretty good prices for livestock producers.
We are across the board again there, and there's several factors of that. One of them is these losses of pigs to PEDV this year has shortened hog supplies some, but we've made up for most of that with heavier weights. The real driving factor has been demand. Demand has been excellent for both beef and pork. We've had large year-over-year increases in demand, and that's come back. People are willing to pay larger prices for this product. You know, some underlying things about, you know, less concern about fat, cholesterol, an understanding that what we thought about fat and cholesterol back in the 70s and 80s was pretty much wrong, it looks like. A lot more concern about carbohydrates. So some fundamental changes in consumer tastes and preferences that we think has got legs and going to be here for a while.
Well, and also the feed availability and the prices of feed are about as good as you could expect.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're not going back to $2 corn and $180 bean meal, but, you know, we're at the lowest levels on cost that we've been in 5 years. And so, I mean, it's just and we're not increasing corn usage for ethanol every year like we were. It's pretty much flat. It'll grow a little bit, but not much. And we can probably keep up with that with trend yield growth on corn. We've kind of caught up on the soybean thing. We were very tight stocks last year and this year on soybeans. USDA says we're going to triple those by the end of next year. And so it's just, and we're in a lot better place from a cost standpoint. We're in a lot better place from a demand standpoint. Now, we're going to get some expansion, and eventually we're going to get supply that's going to eat all this up probably, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. And so it's going to be a very good year for pork producers, a couple years. It's going to be a very good 2 or 3 years for cattle producers, especially cow-calf operators too.
Well, speaking of ethanol, a few years ago, livestock producers were pretty upset about ethanol production. And like all supply demand, it almost seems like we're working itself out. How do you feel about it now, about whether livestock production and ethanol production can coexist?
Well, they've always been able to coexist. The trouble is that our policy decisions forced ethanol production to increase at a rate that was not sustainable. It went too fast. We could, you know, we're always growing. The trend yield on corn is up about 2 bushels per year. Well, if you had grown the ethanol business at a rate equivalent to that, I wouldn't have been able to gripe too much about it. But it was far faster than that, and it caused a huge dislocation of corn from livestock to ethanol, and the economic impact of this was very negative for producers. So this isn't an issue of whether we produce ethanol. This is an issue of whether we produce that we've had subsidized, mandated ethanol, and the rate of change in those government programs were way wrong from what we could do physically on the ground. Had they just had some thought here and matched this up to the rate at which we could have increased our production of corn, I wouldn't have had a whole lot of gripes about it. I mean, as I tell, you know, people in the corn business, I don't hate ethanol. I don't like subsidized mandated ethanol when I'm the alternative user of the input.
So you think, what do you think about the RFS the way it is right now? I mean, do you think it should continue or do you think it should go away?
No, I think it should go away. I mean, we've thrown billions of dollars at this industry already. It ought to have to stand on its own now. And it has a place in the fuel business as an oxygenant, as an oxygen and as an octane enhancer. It's not going away from there. I don't think they're going back to MTBE or anything like that because there's some negatives involved there. In my opinion, like I say, we've thrown enough taxpayer money at this. It ought to have to stand on its own.
Okay, well, getting back to especially the hog industry, you talked a little bit about the impacts of PED and what the losses look like right now and what the actual slaughter numbers have been this year.
Yeah, I mean, we've been trying to estimate how many pigs have been lost since last spring, and we've had some numbers out. You know, people have been able to see them for a long time, and they've actually come out pretty accurate as we've gone through the summer. The slaughter reductions are actually much larger than we calculated in March and April, mainly because we had rapidly rising prices, and so people fed hogs a little longer and delayed their marketings. And that's what impacted that. But since then, the numbers have been very close to our numbers. They still are. This week we're going to be down about 8% on slaughter, and we had August down about 10%. I think we're probably we were a little high on that one, but still we're going to have significant year-over-year reductions of slaughter through September and into the fall. You know, it's still going to be supportive to hog prices, and even though those hog prices have sold off in the last couple of weeks, they're still record high, and it's going to be the best economic year for producers ever because the demand for pigs and the demand for pork is inelastic. So this, when we've taken 1% out of the supply with pigs, the price goes up by more than 1%, and that means total revenue goes up. And so it's a remarkable economic time. We don't like it because we don't raise those pigs for them to die, and we'll do everything we can to keep that from happening. But from an economic standpoint, it's certainly been a boon.
What is your price forecast for this year?
Well, we had third quarter prices up in the 120 to 130, 125 range, and I think we were just too high on that. I think, you know, these high teens right now, but we still think we're going to trade the fourth quarter prices back up to around $1 a pound on a carcass weight basis, and then down into the 90s next year, we're touching $100 in the second quarter is what our forecasts are at the present time. And I think I'd stick with those given the strength of demand, and we're not going to solve all the PEDV problems by next year when it gets cold again. We're going to start losing some pigs again because this is a tough virus.
Well, long term, you looked ahead about 2 years, and one of the factors there is exports, and we're looking at a decision on country of origin labeling, which could result in trade retaliation. We've also got a couple of pretty significant trade negotiations going on worldwide. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, exports have been certainly one of our growth areas. I mean, the rate of growth in exports has slowed pretty dramatically the last 3 years, and I don't know that we're going back to the old rate. Obviously, China is awfully important. The trade negotiations you talked about, especially TPP, is very important because one of the most restricted markets we sell to now is Japan, and with TPP, it would take away the gate price mechanism and open up a huge portion of lower valued product for U.S. product. I'm not very optimistic about the Europeans, and the reason I'm not is that the Europeans are professional protectionists, and I don't think you're going to win negotiating with them. Canada has an agreement. I don't think it's very good, but, you know, we'll see. I hope we get better, but I'm not very optimistic about that. I still think we're going to grow our exports, and we have some other markets like Colombia, Australia, the Dominican Republic that are growing at a nice clip now, and they're going to continue to do that. Korea is still a growth market as those tariffs come down under the free trade agreement. So exports still going to be important. It's going to be tough to grow them as fast as we did the decade of the 2000s. I think we're going to grow at a slower rate. You know, Smithfield's deal with Shanghai I still think is quite positive for our exports to China long run. I'm still very optimistic of that. We export about 23% of our product, so that's a bit of a risky thing. And you know, after we've seen this virus do some things, so we know that animal disease is important, and hopefully that kind of wakes us up to make sure we take care of that.
Well, what about Cool and the Cool ruling? Could be coming down in a month or so.
I think it's going to go against us. I've never been a fan of Cool. I've thought it was bad policy from the beginning. I'm not surprised with how it's all played out. When it goes against us, as I understand, we may have some kind of an appeal authority on that decision. This is just a never-ending series of appeals. But at some point, that's going to come to an end, and Congress is going to have to act. Because I've said all along that you can't write – I didn't think you could write a rule that met the requirements of World Trade Organization and also met the letter of the law. And so that means you got to change the law. Most observers, I think that it'll get to the 11th hour and Congress will act because the retaliation lists are for way more than agriculture. And so the Chamber of Commerce and some people like that are involved in this. And it's a trade issue now. And hopefully that's going to get some attention and get this solved. Like I say, it's been a bad, bad idea from the beginning. But, you know, some people got to figure that out.
When you gave your long-term two-year forecast, you concluded by saying you think there's going to be a mess in 2016. What does that mean?
Well, given the size of profits, given the fact that we're kind of on the backside of the ethanol increases, at least, we've kind of caught up with that from terms of acreage and yields. I think we're going to have very good economic conditions, and we're going to expand. And it wouldn't surprise me to see us expand the sow herd by 3-4. I don't think we'll go to 5% next year, but 3-4% next year. If we get a bit of a handle on PEDV, we'll go back to increasing productivity instead of dealing with lower productivity. We've got these hogs heavier now, and I don't think we're going back on that. We're going to keep them heavier. So add it all up, and we could have substantially more production in 2016. And we have one fewer packing plant than we did the last time we had a record of slaughter back in 2007, that packing plant being a casualty of country of origin labeling, in my opinion, in Sioux City, Iowa. So by the fall of 2016, it could be a whole lot of pigs and not enough packing space, and that would be certainly be a mess. So I think producers need to be aware of that, because if we started tomorrow trying to work toward getting a packing plant built, we'd be hard-pressed to have it up and running by the fall of 2016. So that constraint is not going away, so we better make our decisions with that constraint in mind.
Interesting. All right. Well, thank you very much, Steve, here at the BIVI North Carolina Swine Health Seminar. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.